Right. As we begin tonight, I'd like to ask you to take whatever you've got in your hands and set it aside just on the bench next to you. Just get your hands free so there's nothing distracting you, nothing to play with. And for the next few minutes, I'd like for you to focus with me just on the screens back here. I won't actually look at them, but just focusing on those screens. I want you to imagine with me for the next few moments. It's early, early in the morning, much earlier than youth ministers get up out of bed. You're awake well before the sunlight, and as you're laying in bed, you're thinking to yourself how much your feet hurt, how much they ache from the day before. You think about how much your back is sore, how sore it is from the work of the previous day, from all of the bending, all of the stooping, all of the picking up and carrying of things. It's getting harder as the years and months go by to get yourself out of bed in the mornings because it hurts, because you're tired, because you're sore. But you understand your job. You understand the vital importance of the things that you do. So you get up. It's time to start your day. And as you get out of bed and you eat breakfast and you continue on with your day, you start as you walk out into your field where you have dust drying. You have all of the makings for clay drying there in your field in the sun. It doesn't come in the prepackaged things like we're used to today. You actually have to physically make it yourself. So you have all of the ingredients drying there on the field, and as you begin your day, the first task of the day is to gather up everything that had been drying from the day before. So you gather it all up, and you take it from that field, and you take it, you know, maybe it's just a few steps with your wheelbarrow to the trough that is full of water, because it takes water to put all of these particles together, to get rid of the big rocks, to get rid of the dust that you don't want, to let it settle out. And you put it in the water and you get it all ready to go, and you can't continue with the next step because you have to go back and you have to put out more dust for the next day. So you go back to your field with your shovel as you shovel, and you put it out and you spread it all out so that the sun can dry it and that it can be used again tomorrow. And you go back to the trough, and you come to the trough, and on top is what's known as the slip. It is the mixture of all of the clay that it's been sitting there from the day before. It's had time to mix together, to bond together, to do all of the things that it does chemically, chemistry-wise. You screen it off, because that's what you need. All the rest of the bad stuff is down in the bottom. You skim the top off, and you set it on the ground, and you begin to tread it, much like you would grapes, to get the juice out of grapes, like you've seen on the I Love Lucy shows. You begin treading the clay because you've got to mix it all together. You've got to make sure that everything is together just right, or it's not going to work. You're not going to be able to use the clay that you're working on today. And so you tread, and you tread. And finally, the consistency is just right, and you take it and you set it aside. Maybe you cover it up, and it just sits there. And it's going to sit there for the next 6 months. 6 months before you'll ever touch that pile of clay again, as it cures, as it works, as the properties become what you want them to be. You leave that pile, and you move on to a pile that you made 6 months ago, the clay that you're going to be working with on this particular day, and you start to get it ready. You take it off of the pile, and you take it over to the table, and it's not ready to go on the wheel just yet because it still has air pockets, air bubbles, things in it that you have to get out, and you have to physically get those out. They just don't come out magically. You knead on this clay much like you would on a lump of dough, as you knead and work the clay, you've got to get all of the air out so that when you put it on the wheel, it's not falling apart on you. That it's something that you can use, something that you can work with, something that will be dependable. You've got to need it. Finally, after all of the hours of prep work, you're finally ready to begin your day. You're finally ready to begin your job. It's backbreaking. It's mundane and it's repetitive work. You can't skip one single step. You can't leave one step out, because if you skip the step 6 months later, what you made isn't going to be ready to use. You're not going to be able to use it. It's going to be absolutely worthless to you. So you can't skip one step. You can't take one day off, because if you take that one day off, the cycle is broken and you won't have anything to work with in 6 months. You won't have anything to keep you going, because this is your job. This is your job. This is your income. This is how you support yourself and your family. The life of a potter is not an easy one. It's a never-ending cycle that you do over and over and over again of absolutely back-breaking labor. People don't appreciate you. They never come to you and say, "You know what, man, you did such a good job on this pot. Thank you so much." They never pat you on the back and say, "You did a good job. Thank you. Really appreciate it. You know, my family and I, we were able to keep the water in your pot. You did a great job." More often than not, people are inclined to tell you how to do your job. They tell you that the pot that you made them wasn't big enough, that it wasn't sturdy enough, that it broke, you know, when a fly landed on it. It broke as it rolled across the floor of the house. They tell you that it's not pretty enough to decorate their house with. Or they want to say, "Well, what if you tried it this way? What if instead of a big fat pot, you made me just a little skinny one?" There's always someone out there who seems like they can do your job better, isn't there? Someone who knows more about your job than you do. And they're always free to tell you about it. They don't realize, as a potter, what a labor of love it truly is. That if you didn't truly love your job, that if you didn't truly care about the people you were helping, you wouldn't be doing this, because this is not clean work, folks, is it? And you can see by the man's hands. This is a labor of love. And as ordinary people, we have no idea what it takes to create these things each and every day. We have no idea what it is to do this job each and every day. We have no idea of the time and the effort and the care taken. No idea of the time that was put into planning, of the effort that it takes to do this particular thankless job. So as we come to this passage, Bobby, in Jeremiah chapter 28, or not 28, 18, we have absolutely no idea what it takes to be a potter. If you want to go ahead and pick up your Bibles, Jeremiah chapter 18, it says this: The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord, "Arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will let you hear my words." So I went down to the potter's house, and there he was working at his wheel. And the vessel he was making of clay was spoiled in the potter's hand, and he reworked it into another vessel, as it seemed good to the potter to do. It truly is a labor of love, sitting there at this wheel day after day, because not just anyone can be a potter. It takes a special person to be able to sit at that wheel hours upon hours, working on perhaps the same lump of clay the entire day, trying to get it just right. Because someone who didn't care wouldn't go through all of the prep work that you just went through. They wouldn't have taken the time to set the materials out to dry. They wouldn't have taken the time to let them sit in the water and start to come together in the right ways. They wouldn't have taken the time to set it out there on the floor and to tread it and to get that consistency just right. They wouldn't have been able to wait 6 months to even pick up that same lump of clay again. They wouldn't have taken the time to put it out on the table and to knead it and to work the air out of it so that it's good and so that it's usable. Someone who didn't care wouldn't do this day after day. They would get frustrated with the repetitiveness of it, and they would give up because it's not worth it to them. All of the trouble, all of that prep work just isn't worth it to some people. Someone who didn't care wouldn't know what to do when they came to the wheel. Because you see, it takes a lot of planning, a lot of preparing. They would come unprepared to the wheel. They would have no idea what they were doing. They would have no idea what they were trying to make, what this lump of clay was supposed to be when they were done. Because you have to have a plan. Someone who didn't care wouldn't keep coming back. They wouldn't keep working on that same annoying lump of clay that they just can't get quite right. Because you see, to keep coming back, to keep working with that same annoying lump of clay takes love and it takes devotion. And as people, as consumers, or more likely in Jeremiah's case, as observers of the potter, as we were watching the video, we find ourselves going, "Oh no, why did you do that? Why did he keep cutting it off and cutting it off and cutting it off?" We like to criticize, don't we? We like to say, "Well, he's not much of a potter. He didn't do that right. He skipped that step." Or, "Man, he didn't make that pot big enough. That's not going to hold any water." We love to critique. We want to say, "Well, why isn't that part just a little bit more round? Why did he leave such a huge lip on that thing? You're not going to be able to do anything with that pot." We love to question. We love to pick it apart. As we sat there and watched it, I know some of you were probably doing that in your head. I know I did the first time I watched it. We love to pick it apart. We love to question and criticize. We do this every single day of our lives to people, don't we? To people that we come into contact with, to our bosses at work. We want to know, "Boss man, why? Why do you want me to do this? This is beneath me." Or, "Boss man, if I do it that way, it's going to take forever. But if I do it my way, if I do it the way that I want to do, the way that I know how to do it best, it'll just take like 5 minutes. We like to cut down our friends, question our friends, criticize our friends. We even criticize people who aren't our friends. As we're walking down the street, it was, "Man, did you see what she was wearing?" You're at the mall, and it's like, "How could she even leave her house in that? Did she look in the mirror?" We love to criticize and question our family members. They're the easiest ones, aren't they? All of this is what we do as people. We criticize, we question. We do this every single day to our people, but we do it every single day to the God that we claim to love. If we're honest with ourselves, we say, "God, why did you let this happen to me? God, why did you make me the way I am? God, why are you doing that in those other countries? Well, if I was God, I wouldn't let that happen. If I was God, we would all have everything that we need. Everything would be perfect because I would be in charge." We look at God and we say, "God, if you would only do this, it would be so much easier to believe in you. If only you would do this, just let us see you." We criticize and we critique. We nitpick the Almighty God of the universe. And we do it every single day of our lives. In a very real sense, God is the potter of your life. As we come to this picture here in Jeremiah, God says, Jeremiah, I want you to watch this man. I want you to watch what he's doing. Later in the passage, if you look at verse 6 through 10, you can do that later. God is the potter. He is the potter of our lives. And as people, as pots, as lumps of clay on that wheel, we often find ourselves criticizing and critiquing and questioning God. Do you have any idea how ridiculous that sounds? Absolutely ridiculous that sounds. We find these verses in Romans chapter 9. It says, who in the world do you think you are to second guess God? Do you for one moment suppose any of us knows enough to call God into question? Clay doesn't talk back to the fingers that mold it, saying, why did you shape me like this? Isn't it obvious that the potter has a perfect right to shape one lump of clay into a vase for holding flowers and another into a pot for cooking beans? If God needs one style of pottery especially designed to show his angry displeasure and another style carefully crafted to show his glorious goodness, isn't that all right? I love these verses. Who are we to question, to criticize, to critique, to nitpick God? Who are we? Does the clay sit there and ask questions of the potter as it is sitting on the wheel? Of course not. That'd be silly. It'd be something like straight out of a fairy tale in the Bible, and our Christian lives are so much more than a fairy tale. Because you see, the clay is there for the potter, not the potter there for the clay. The clay can't create. It can't plan out what it wants to be. It can't execute that plan, even if it could make one. The clay is there for the potter, and it is in one way or another brought into submission, as it were. To be what the potter wants it to be what God envisions for that lump of clay. Despite its best efforts to fall apart, because sometimes that happens. Sometimes you miss an air bubble as you're kneading, and as the pot is spinning, as you're molding, as you're shaping, the air bubble all of a sudden is there and the pot collapses. Sometimes you have to cut a little bit off. Sometimes it takes just a little bit of pressure here. Just in one spot, just a little bit of pressure. Sometimes it takes a lot more pressure in another spot to get it where you want it to be. Sometimes it takes a little bit of extra care here because the pot has gotten a little bit thin on one side and you want to be careful not to break it. Some pulling and some stretching. You saw that in the video as he's pulling it up, as he's stretching the clay out, as he's cutting some of the clay away, as he adds a little bit of the clay to be able to keep going with his work. As people, we find ourselves crying out under the pressure when God finds that special weak spot. That special spot in our lives as lumps of clay that needs just a little bit more pressure than others, where he has to push just a little bit harder to get it where he wants us to be. And we complain. We do. We have all of our dreams of the dream job that we want to have, of the guy or girl that we're going to marry when we get older. We have our 5-year plan. This was one of my favorites of a couple that got married not too long ago, one of our friends. They have their 5-year plan and their 10-year plan, and it's going to go just like this because that's the way they planned it. Do you know how silly that sounds? We have it all planned out. We forget our opening passage out of Jeremiah chapter 29, where it says that I have plans for you. That's God saying to you and I that I know what I want you to be. I know how to make you what I want, what I need you to be, what you're supposed to be. I know how to do that because I'm the potter. The potter has every single right to make what he wants, doesn't he? It's silly to think that we, as the clay, could tell God where not to push. I don't know what your weak spots are, if it's drugs, if it's alcohol, if it's women, if it's men, if it's lying, if it's cheating, if it's stealing, if it's pride, if it's self-absorption, all of these other little sins and things that we like to push away, and I think the home builders class has been talking about, like the acceptable sins, the things that we make, that it's okay if we do those things, but it's not okay if we do these big sins. But it's all the same. These are all weak spots. These are all parts of our lives that God is working on, that God is pushing on, that God is trying to get right so that we can be a stable vessel in the end. The potter knows before he sits down and starts that wheel spinning what he's going to make. Before he even sits down, maybe while he's been doing all of the prep work we were talking about earlier, he's been thinking about, okay, this is what I need to make today. This is what I'm going to make today. This is the first pot that I'm going to make. It's going to be small. It's going to be round. And that kind of thing. Maybe he's been planning that in his head. Even when we were a lump inside of our mothers before we were born, God knew what he wanted us to be. He knew the plans that he had for you, the plans that he has for me. God knows what he wants us to be, and despite our best efforts, he can make us exactly what he wants so that we can be used in the best ways for his kingdom. When things go bad, we want to know, why, God? Why don't you love us? We wonder, and we start to question God's love, whether or not he's really caring for us and looking out for us. I want you to think of this. The next time you find yourself, start wondering about that. That if he didn't care, he wouldn't have gone through all of the prep work, would he? But he did. He sent his son Jesus to this earth to live as a man, to be persecuted and put on trial, to die on that cross and rise again. He went through all of the prep work just for worthless lumps of clay like you and I. He did that just for us. If he didn't care, he wouldn't be with you every single day of your lives. He would have given up and walked away from the wheel a long, long time ago, but he didn't. 16 years later, he's still there with you. 25, 35, even 75 and 80 years later, most of you, some of you can attest to this. He is still there with you every single day, working with you, molding you into the things that he wants you to be. If he didn't care, he wouldn't be with you. If he didn't care, that means that your life is meaningless and that he didn't have a purpose for you. What kind of an existence is that? To know that everything that you deal with, every hardship, everything that brings you to tears, all the shaping, all of that molding that you've been going through for years and years and years is completely worthless. I don't know about you, but I don't like to live my life that way. I like to think that everything I've gone through is for some reason. Whether or not I realize it at that moment, everything that I deal with has a purpose. Because God is there. If he didn't care, he would throw you out into the potter's field that we read about in Matthew chapter 27. He would throw you out. He would completely be done with you. He would have given up on you. That would be the end of you as a pot, the end of you as a lump of clay. You would be out there in the sun to bake and become absolutely worthless. But you see, he keeps coming back. He keeps working on that same old tired lump of a person. Because he really does love you and me. He really does care for us. When he works on us, it doesn't mean that he hates us. It doesn't mean that he's forgotten about us. It doesn't mean that he's gone. In every sense of the phrase, we are in the potter's house. Whether we realize it or not, And we're much more than just the second-hand observers that Jeremiah was. We get the first-hand version of it as we are sitting on that wheel of God. And as He is molding and shaping us into the vessels that He wants us to be, we get a first-hand view. Do you know how cool that is? When you feel that pressure, when you feel Him working on you, when it feels like your life has completely fallen apart, we need to remember that we are in the hands of a skillful potter. The guy in the video is pretty good. God's even better. The most skillful potter of all, if you want to say that. He knows what He's doing with you. He had something special in mind just for you, even before you were born. And it's really, really hard for us to mess that up. Rather than sinners in the hands of an angry God, as the old sermon goes, perhaps we would be better described as lumps of clay in the hands of a loving potter. I don't know where you are in your lives right now. I don't know what part of your life God might be working on, but chances are there's at least one or probably more people in this audience that are hurting right now, that are starting to question God, that are starting to criticize God, that are starting to nitpick at God and say, God, why did you do this? Why did you make me like this? Why are you bringing this trouble into my life? And it's hard, and it hurts. But I want to assure you that God is working on you, that He is making you into the young man, young woman that He wants you to be, that He's called you to be the way that He can use you best in this life. If you're feeling that pressure right now, I just want to tell you that we can pray for you. We would love to pray for you right now. Maybe your life is fine. You've got everything going. And if that's the way it is, I'm glad. But I want you to remember that when those things do come, that God still loves you and that He's working on you. If you have pain that we can help you with tonight, if there is anything that as a church we can help you with, maybe you need to even just start your life off with Him tonight in baptism right here behind me. We can do that. If there's anything that you need, I want to ask that you please come as we stand and sing.